I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being so supportive. It really does mean a great deal to both Molly and I, so thank you so much.
How are you, Dad?
I think I'm all right, darling, thank you. Just a bit, as ever, a bit flustered.
Flustered?
Yeah, because there are all sorts of odd things happening all the time. It's kind of...
Do you reckon if you listen back to the start of this podcast for the last 6 years, it would generally sound the same?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's probably right. I'm always the same.
Every time. How are you? Well, I've just got a lot on my plate. Had a very difficult week.
It's not that it's very difficult. It's just there seems to be a lot going on.
Will you remind people that you're doing your videos on Patreon?
Yes, I will. I'm trying to do more videos on Patreon. I've neglected it, forgive me, but I hope, although Molly's going to contradict me at once, I might have a bit more time in the month of March to do it, but probably won't have. There you go.
I'm not saying anything. I just give the warnings and you just say what's what. So.
Okay, well, if you will listen to last week's podcast, you will know that I was talking about a gentleman who didn't want to get parole. He wanted to remain in prison. This week, I'm talking about a man who's determined to try and get out of jail, even though that's going to be quite a difficult task.
Okay. There's some contemporary relevance to this story, isn't
there? Very much so. The subject of this week's podcast is Charles Bronson, who's having a public parole hearing at the beginning of March.
Is he the person that Tom Hardy played in that film?
In the movie Bronson, yes, in 2009. Always said to be, and he doesn't dispute it, Britain's most violent prisoner. I'm just trying to get the figures of exactly how long he's spent in jail. It's a very long time. He's been in jail for the past 49 years and has spent barely 122 days outside jail, about 3 months.
Okay, well, we should introduce it properly. What are you calling it?
I don't know. I think we call it...
Bronson?
Bronson. I think so.
If it ain't broke.
Yeah, don't fix it.
Okay, well, here you go with Bronson.
Right. Charles Bronson was born Michael Gordon Peterson in Luton in Bedfordshire. He was born in December 1952, which means he's 70 now. He was originally just simply a pretty small level, low level petty criminal. But eventually, in 1974, at the age of 22, he got 7 years for armed robbery. He was a very angry man and persistently disrupted whatever jail he happened to be in. Protests, attacks, violence. And so the original 7 years, which had been given in 1974, extended in the end to 13 years. He was finally released this first time in 1987. And at that point, he decided to stop being Michael Gordon Peterson. And he adopted the name Charles Bronson, though he'd never seen the American actor of the same name. He decided to adopt the name because his friends in prison, including Ronnie and Reggie Cray, had suggested he would be a very good bare-knuckle fighter. So he called himself Charles Bronson so that he could go into bare-knuckle fights. The first period of his freedom, I think, was 69 days before he was arrested again for armed robbery. He got married the first time in 1972. Funnily enough, his first wife has recently given an interview. She was called Irene Kelsey. He divorced her in 1976 when he was in jail. But she's remained remarkably, how can one put it, relaxed about him, and still calls him her ex-husband, and she hasn't tried to dismiss it all. And they had a child who was called Michael after his dad, Michael Jonathan Peterson. Bronson's parents were called Ira and Joe Peterson. His father ran a conservative club in Aberystwyth, of all unlikely things. And both his uncle and aunt served as the mayor of Luton. He's in many ways, a very upright boy. He moved to Wales, where his father had gone to Aberystwyth, and then back to Luton, and then as a teenager went to Ellesmere Port in Cheshire. And that's when he had his first brushes with the law. At 19, he was convicted for his part in what was then called a smash and grab raid. I don't think we use that phrase anymore. It's basically breaking in jeweller's window.
People don't do it anymore, really, do they?
No, don't really.
Burglary is more sophisticated. Well, actually, that is the sweeping generalisation. I take that back. I've no idea if burglary is more or less sophisticated.
But certainly, he got his suspended sentence. But nevertheless, at the age of 22, as I said, in 1974, he gets 7 years for armed robbery. And his anger escalates. He was transferred relentlessly from prison to prison because prisons couldn't handle him. He was just so difficult. He finally reached Parkhurst in 1976, then a famous prison on the Isle of Wight, where he befriended Ronnie and Reggie Cray. He called them the best two guys I've ever met. But by 1976, late 76, he's transferred to Broadmoor, which is a high security psychiatric hospital, and then transferred to Rampton, another high security mental hospital, and then finally to Ashworth, and then back to Broadmoor, where he's reunited with Ronnie Cray. In 1982... after having been in prison now for considerably more than the 7 years, at least a year more than the 7 years he'd originally been sentenced to, he made his first rooftop protest. He was famous for getting onto the roofs of prisons, throwing tiles, you know, slates off the roof if anybody came near him. And then in 1982, there was a second rooftop protest. This time, it lasted for 3 days, and it caused £250,000 worth of damage. And there he was. I don't know, you may or may not have seen, there's some wonderful video of Bronson doing these extraordinary things in prison. There's one of him stark naked, running along a corridor, waving a sort of impromptu sword. He has a kind of a sharpened something on top of a stick, and it's very, I mean, in many ways it's hilarious, in other ways it's terrifying. Anyway, he's back in Broadmoor. He doesn't want to be in Broadmoor because he says they're all mad, and I'm not mad. So he finally has an 18-day hunger strike and gets transferred to Ashworth, which is another high security mental hospital, but rather nicer. Or more modern, anyway. But in 1985, there's a third rooftop protest, again causing damage, this time at Walton Prison in Liverpool. I mean, it's literally shuttled about colossally. And in 1986 alone, he was transferred 8 times. He tried to strangle the governor of Wormwood Scrubs. He was put in isolation at Gartree. I mean, he was a handful, let's put it that way. So, in 1987, some 13 years after his first incarceration, he's released. And he goes to see his parents in Wales. He goes to see mum and dad, you know, in the Aberystwyth. He takes up, as I said, bare knuckle boxing. But he doesn't really do that. I mean, it's not exactly licensed sport. And on the 1st of January 1988, he robs a jewellery store and flogs everything except for a ring, which he gives to his then girlfriend. On the 7th of January 1988, he's arrested again and sent back to prison. He's been released for 69 days. Okay, in June 1988, he pleads guilty and is given another 7 years. He's actually released again in 1992. But this time, he only has 53 days of freedom before he's arrested for conspiracy to rob. And so the pattern of arrest, violence, transfer is really very firmly established. In September 1993, he's found guilty of intent to rob, but not conspiracy. He's sent to Wakefield, the so-called monster mansion, which he goes to from time to time, and he spends 40 days naked in isolation. He's a very, very angry man.
Must have been cold.
He was. And then finally, in September 94, his father Joe dies, and he's in almost constant solitary confinement. In many ways, tragic. At one point, an Iraqi hijacker bumps into him in the queue for food, and he takes offence at this and proceeds to take that Iraqi and two others hostage. And keep him in a cell. And he demands, Bronson's got nothing if not a sense of humour. He demands a plane to Libya, two Uzi machine guns, 5,000 rounds of ammunition and a cup of tea. Eventually, he lets them out. But of course, his sentence is extended again. Perhaps the turning point of Bronson's extraordinary prison career was in January 1999, when he took an art teacher, Phil Danielson, hostage, because he criticised. Bronson by this time become quite a talented artist, and Danielson, who I think is one of the first people to encourage him to follow his artistic instinct, was a little critical about one particular point. So he took him hostage and tied him with a computer cable to the pool table, and then just proceeded to dance around the pool table for 3 days, brandishing another weapon. Danielson tells the most frightening story. He said, I genuinely thought he was going to kill me. He said, you've taken your last breath. I'm going to... And in the end, he didn't. And what was one of the great ironies of Bronson's story is he never actually killed anybody. He never raped anybody. All he did was be very, very, very disruptive and violent to boot. He wasn't afraid of attacking fellow prisoners, inmates. He wasn't above attacking the prison governor if the thought came upon him. But he actually, and he says this now quite, I think, really pointedly, he says, look, I haven't killed anybody, but I've spent all these years in jail and I haven't... What have I done?
He's like a kind of naughty schoolboy, though, isn't he?
Yes.
Well, much worse. But.
Yes, and I think one of the things I like, not like, but I admire, he said once, and I think it's relatively interesting, he said, I'm a nice guy.
But you made that person feel like he was going to be killed. That's
right.
Not nice.
No, let me finish the quote. I'm a nice guy, but sometimes I lose all my senses and become nasty. That doesn't make me evil, just confused.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's got psychological issues.
Yes, I think that would be fair. However, He also, just by the by, finds time to marry, for the second time, a lady called Saira Ali Ahmed in 2001. And he changes his name to Charles Ahmed and converts to Islam. But they divorce in 2005 and he rejects rejects Islam. Bronson's story is fraught with the most extraordinary curlicues. I don't know what else to call it. I mean, at one point, you know, it seems as though he fathered another child apart from Michael Peterson, his with the first wife, unknowingly, and that the DNA test is taken. I mean, it is extraordinary. And this, he seems like a lightning rod for controversy. Everywhere he goes, everything he does is a controversy. As you quite rightly reminded me, in 2009, a film about him is released called Bronson, which in some ways is a relatively sympathetic portrait. And it is quite difficult not to feel at least some sympathy for Bronson.
This might go back to my previous argument about rehabilitation.
Yes, well, it will go back to that. In 2004, in the wake of the attack on the art teacher, for which he's given a life sentence with a minimum term of 3 years, because he's already serving a term, but he's got a minimum extra 3 years. In 2004, three Court of Appeal judges reject his appeal against a life sentence. And in 2014, he changes his name again, this time to Charles Salvador, in tribute to his favourite artist, Salvador Dali. So he becomes Charles Salvador, which is what he's when he appears for parole this month at the Court of Appeal. So he's changed his name to Charles Salvador. Then he gave a wonderful quote. He said, "The old me dried up. Bronson came alive in 1987 and died in 2014. In February 2017, he married again, the third time, this time a little known but quite hard-working soap star. She was in Corrie for a while and Emmerdale. She's called Paula Williamson. But they got married in the prison chapel in 2017, November 2017. But in 2018, the following year, he asked for a divorce because she was photographed on holiday cavorting with various other men. And she was obviously to be sad, rather sad, because she was found dead at home in 2019. Bronson has long campaigned for release and became one of the first, not the first because of a delay, one of the first prisoners to be given a public hearing, a public parole hearing, which has been taking place at the High Court in London in the first week of March this year. It'll be fascinating. There are a series of very interesting pieces about him and about whether or not he should be released. He's now, in HMP Wood Hall. And over a period of all these years in prison, he's attacked 20 people, taken 11 hostages, but never killed anyone. Although, as I say, Phil Danielson, the art teacher, believed he was going to lose his life. Although, interestingly, he's recently given a series of interviews in which he says, I forgive Bronson, although I did fear for my life.
Yeah. I don't think that diminishes
the severity of the crime. I agree with that. But the reality, and it'll be fascinating, will the parole board in this public hearing, which is said to last 2 days, going to be quite a long parole hearing with a lot of evidence, will the parole board see Bronson as someone who should never be let out? Could he be let out? He says he wants to go and live in a caravan on the North Devon coast and walk on the beach.
Oh, yes, I read that.
That's his latest.
How old is he now?
70.
Hmm.
Born in 1952.
Hmm. What would you do?
If I were on the parole board?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very difficult question. Because, as you quite rightly say, one man certainly feared for his life. He's taken endless 11 hostages.
He's also institutionalised.
He's
barely existed outside of prison his whole life.
That's right.
So he would need a lot of support in order to be able to successfully integrate back into society. You know, you've no idea what his stresses are.
No.
Unless it felt like he had a decent amount of rehabilitation. I don't know. I suppose it depends on what he says.
Well, he's sold his paintings for charity.
And what people say about him. You know, all that he was shown was that if I act up, I get attention. And I get to move around prisons and I get to feel like I'm more in control. So, of course, he would act up more.
Hmm. If I were on the parole board, I'd be tempted not to award parole.
Perhaps you could go and put him in a cell with that chap we talked about last week.
Yes. Hmm. It's very interesting, isn't it? Here's one man who's been in jail all this time and wants to get out. There's another man who's been in jail, as we talked about last week, who's been in jail and doesn't want to get out.
Hmm.
What would you do?
Don't know. Depends what he said, I suppose.
It depends on the evidence.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
And I wouldn't like to be so flippant as to suggest it's so easy to just be on a parole board and say yay or nay.
Mm.
So I would be cautious, I think, because he has exhibited very erratic behaviour in his whole life. So yeah. He does pose some threat to society.
Yes.
That's the issue.
I think he does pose a threat.
It doesn't, you know, it's not okay to put, you know, even if he's older or whatever, if he threatened anyone and made them feel so uncomfortable that they might lose their lives, like that.
Yes.
That's not okay, because that's like a permanent trauma to someone.
Yeah. Well, I think there's no doubt that the art teacher in question has given an interview. I mean, there was a Channel 4 documentary about Bronson this week, two parts, which contained an awful lot of video conversations with Bronson, which had been done covertly. And when during lockdown, they were allowed video conversations, and that some of those.
Well, did he know they were being used on thing?
Yeah, he knew they were being used. You could argue that he's a manipulator.
Yes, I think you can definitely argue that.
But nevertheless, to put his point of view, I think he says it. I've spent my life in prison, and I haven't killed anybody.
Yes. I mean, that's just not a justification, because there's lots and lots of people in prison not for murder.
Yes.
You can inflict incredible harm on people and you haven't killed them. So I don't believe that is a justification for anything.
No, I think I agree with you. I mean, I think that level of threat is a very considerable.
He's appearing about impact that you have on someone else's life. Like, if you stage a home invasion and you rob a family at gunpoint, you haven't killed anyone, but you've inflicted incredible trauma on people. That is like they'll never ever fully recover from.
I quite agree.
So, you know, there isn't the murder not murder thing is just not a thing, in my opinion.
Okay, well, that's a strong argument. For me, I do believe that rehabilitation should be possible. I do believe that everyone should have a chance. But there are cases like this which are really very nuanced, because at no point is it clear that he is a changed man. He seems to be the same man. He never seemed to have... How can one put it? He doesn't seem to have been rehabilitated, but is it fair to have denied him his freedom for 49 years?
Denied him his freedom?
Yes.
It's an interesting way of putting it.
Yes. That's another...
Well, how can you have denied him his freedom if he's constantly doing things to keep extending his sentence?
Yes. Well, that's where the problem lies.
Does it?
Yes.
Why?
Well,
that's his fault. That's nothing to do with anyone else. You go into prison and you behave well, you get let out of prison, like within the constraints of your convicted time period or whatever. If you go into prison and act like a prick the entire time, they're going to keep you in prison. He's not an idiot.
Perhaps he wants to be.
He doesn't know that that's happening.
Yes.
Well, then perhaps the argument is he's not that different from your chap from last week.
Maybe not. Well, that's an interesting thing. I'd like to hear what our listeners think. I really would.
Listeners, you should probably tell us what you think. Otherwise, we'll be at loggerheads on it for.
No, we won't. We're never at loggerheads. But I'd love to hear what other people think. I think it's genuinely interesting. It's a genuine moral dilemma. As the fact that he hasn't...
The working out whether he gets parole, yes, is a moral dilemma.
Yeah.
But it's not something we can take past judgment on.
No.
We don't have enough information.
Well, we don't have the complete... We don't know what the evidence is going to be given. But he's appearing in front of the parole board by video link. I'd be very interested. I mean, I'm a bit busy this week, but otherwise I'd like to go and see it.
Okay. Well, maybe you can get them to record the Zoom, send you the link.
Well, that's the story of Britain's most, I suppose, most notorious prisoner. Some say most violent prisoner.
Bronson.
Charles Bronson.
Thanks, Dad.
Pleasure, Mar.
I don't know how I feel about him.
Well, I suspect we're going to get... There's going to be a lot of coverage.
He's very unsettling.
A lot of coverage is coming this month, in March. A lot. Because it's bound to attract controversy, isn't it? You know, one half are saying, oh, it's not fair. And the other half saying, keep him in jail at all costs. It's bound to be a controversy.
Yeah. Do you think he's brought that on himself, though?
To some extent, yes.
If you run around naked and stage roof sit-ins and what have you.
Rooftop protests. And
did he ever say what his protest was for?
No, not really.
Was he wanted to be let out of prison?
Well, just wanted to cause a lot of trouble.
Well,
I
there
think.
You go.
So that's the story of Michael Gordon Peterson. Also known as Charles Bronson, now known as Charles Salvador.
Also once known as Charles Ahmed.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Well, thank you for that. And
thank you, Mo.
No problem. No problem.
And I'm going to do an interview with a really good writer, in the next batch, talk about crime fiction for a change.
Ooh. Slightly less depressing.
Slightly. Yes. But, you know, it's...
We like to keep it as morbid a level as possible.
Yes. I'm astonished I keep cheerful.
Yeah. This is remarkable, to be fair. So And also you would think like, oh, maybe you just fill all your other time with nice stuff, but you don't. You're like, oh, I've just watched this 10-part documentary on this murderer, or just watched some, yeah. Just read another 6 crime thrillers.
I do.
Yeah.
I watched All Quiet on the Western Front this
week. Oh, Jesus. That was depressing.
Mm.
How long? It's like quite long as well, is it? Like
2 hours and 20 minutes.
2 hours, 20.
Oh. But I remember the original very clearly.
Was it BAFTA winning?
What, All Quiet?
Yeah. Did it deserve its accolades?
I think so. I think it's really, I haven't seen everyone which way and whatever. So, I'd like to see the Banshees of Innisfree.
Well, you can watch that. It's on your Disney Plus thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll have a go. Because I'm a very great admirer. And besides, it's produced by my old assistant.
Can you log in? Yeah, it is. Do you want me to have a look at it?
Yeah, we'll do that. Well, thank you, Mo, very much. And
thank
everyone.
Thank you to all the people that help us. Our producer, Sam Bray, my brother, Dan, who did the music, my friend, George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
And my thanks to Molly, whose idea this was, and my thanks to you for listening. Thank you so much, and do be careful out there.